legislation, texts 12 and 13. Thus being questioned by Maharaj Yudhishthira, Mahatma Vidura gradually described everything he has personally experienced except news of the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. Text 13. Compassionate Mahatma Vidura could not stand to see the Pandavas distressed at any time. Therefore, he did not disclose this unpalatable and unbearable incident, because calamities come of their own accord. Purport. According to Niti Shastra, civic laws, one should not speak an unpalatable truth to cause distress to others. Distress comes upon us in its own way by the laws of nature, so one should not aggravate it by propaganda. For a compassionate soul like Vidura, especially in his dealings with the beloved Pandavas, it was almost impossible to disclose an unpalatable piece of news like the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. Therefore, he purposely refrained from it. Om Agana Chivanandasya Ganandana Shalakaya Chakshun Viditam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
For those who lack the vision to understand what is reality in this world, it is difficult to understand that why should you try for happiness when, just like distress comes of its own accord, similarly happiness will enter your life in the same way. Therefore, Narada Muni instructs in the same first canto, Tasyaiva hito kayate dukovido. If you're actually a cubby, if you're actually a wise, learned person, you understand a basic fact of material existence, that there's no point in putting huge amounts of energy to endeavor for anything available from the lowest planets to the highest planets. Now, why is that? Because by the force of time, your happiness is going to come exactly as you should get it, just as by the force of time, your distress comes according to what you're supposed to get. Now, for someone who is infused with Rajagun, the mode of passion, this is a very difficult point to understand, especially in the current climate of the world today, when everything is measured in terms of economic development. Your individual might, the might of your nation, of your ethnic group, of whatever society you identify with, the might is measured in terms of economic prowess. And to have economic development, you must endeavor. It's all on your shoulders. You must push forward with great intelligence, great ability, and then you'll be happy. This is the dream that's disseminated throughout the world today. Actually, every year or so, the United Nations and some associates, they do a world analysis of who are the happy people according to their material standards that they've determined. And in their surveys, year after year, they find out that the so-called happiest countries in the world, from their material point of view, are the poorest nations. A few years ago, the number one happy country in the world, they determined, was Bangladesh. Places like the USA, Europe, England, Germany, they were down to number 15, 16, 17, 18. This year, I think it's Mexico. So, the very facts as determined by these people throw out their conceptions that in order to be happy you must struggle very much with expertise, with economic political connections, and then your life will be happy. The message of Srimad Bhagavatam is very clear. Use your common sense. No one prays for distress, yet it comes. Similarly, you should understand that your happiness will come automatically in the same way. In other words, you cannot be, from the material point of view, one drop more happy than you're destined to be, nor can you have one drop less distressed than you're destined to get. Now, people will criticize. This is very fatalistic. Anyone who accepts this notion will simply lay around and do nothing while the whole world marches by with mighty progress. Srila Prabhupada himself answered this challenge, saying, no, just because you understand that your happiness and distress comes into your life automatically does not mean you just sit around and do nothing. No. The whole point of Narada Muni's provocation is that you use your valuable human form of life with its valuable time to become Krishna conscious. That is not predetermined. By practicing bhakti yoga, you're actually being the most efficient when it comes to using your time because you're not struggling for things that you would have gotten anyway. You're struggling to please Krishna's senses. That is the essence of life. Now, we're hearing about Mahatma Vidura. He's been in some entangling situations, which, from the material point of view, you could say he had a bad deal. He had circumstances thrust upon him that were very unpalatable. Vidura is attached to his older brother, Dhritarashtra. But we're going to see the nature of that attachment. His attachment is always for the good of Dhritarashtra, in spite of Dhritarashtra's always being partial to his nonsense son, Duryodhana. Still, Vidura, out of attachment, always tried to warn Dhritarashtra, don't let this son overpower you. He's going to destroy everything. Now, Vidura left to go on pilgrimage. The circumstances can seem to be very much against Vidura's happiness, against his well-being. He was tossed out of the palace by Duryodhana. Get this, son of a lowly woman, get him out of here. Why do we have to listen to him? These words, the Bhagavatam describes, pierced Vidura's heart. You see, even though one is a devotee, it doesn't mean that your heart cannot be wounded. But Vidura took advantage of that wounded heart to increase his absorption in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, he left the palace and he went on pilgrimage. In effect, he went out on Vanaprastha, and in this way, an activity or a circumstance that seems unfavorable, being tossed out of a royal palace, because Dhritarashtra took such good care of Vidura. He was living in majestic palatial circumstances. Still, he left, taking the impulse from the sharp words from Duryodhana. So we've heard in previous classes, if you've been here, how this incident shows the combined activity of Yoga Maya and Maha Maya. For Duryodhana, he's interacting with Maha Maya, the illusory energy, causing him to insult such a great soul as Vidura. For Vidura, he's feeling the activity of the Lord's internal potency. Let me increase my Krishna consciousness. So he left. Now he's returned again. And the Pandavas are overwhelmed with a happiness that is unimaginable by anyone with material senses. How can they be so happy to see Vidura? This is the nature of relationships between Vaishnavas. Because Krishna and Krishna's service is in the center, something extraordinarily and inconceivably powerful manifests itself in between devotees. Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita describes that love of Krishna is like a pool of ecstasy in which the Lord and the devotee dive into together. So there's always something extraordinarily powerful going on between devotees because service to Krishna is in the center. So when you read about Vidura's reception by the Pandavas when he returned from pilgrimage, you're reading about something extraordinary. The Shastra describes that the Pandavas, Yudhisthira, Kunti, all the members of the palace felt like their life was returning to their body. They were crying tears of ecstasy just to see Vidura return. Through devotional service to the Lord, we become so close that sometimes we don't understand that. And indeed, we become familiar with each other and not remembering all the time the enormous power that's packed into devotee relationships because of the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We sometimes can joust each other and elbow each other. We can always meditate on this section of the Bhagavatam. Vidura is returning, and the Pandavas and their entourage are beyond happiness. They're not sentimentalists. So many of them are warriors, yet they feel like the life has returned to their body. And then we hear the very sensitive and personal greeting given by Yudhisthira Maharaj. Who is Dharmaraj? He's expert in how to do everything according to the best religious principles. First, he stirs the pot of remembrance. Remembrance is very important in everyone's life. Even materialists love to cherish memories. They love to remind each other of the good moments, the flickering happiness that appeared in their life at some point like a shooting star in the sky and then it disappeared. Everyone likes to remember. When you meet old friends, when you meet family members, always there's this reminiscing, this remembrance that's a part of being a human being. So Yudhisthira, being expert in personal relationships, especially personal relationships with devotees, he immediately brings out to Vidura, "Do you remember how you protected us?" He's teaching us how to deal with devotees. You can see in every devotee's life that there has been some sacrifice. And if you point that out, "Do you remember when you served Krishna in such and such a way?" That devotee's heart becomes melted, relieved, and in fact, even better, that devotee becomes encouraged to do more for Krishna. So, Yudhisthira is demonstrating how to do this. Do you remember? You were partial to us. Your partiality was like the wings of a bird. You protected us. Do you remember? Of course, it's not that Vidura was negligent of Duryodhana and company. He was also, in a sense, partial to them by giving Duryodhana good instruction. Don't act like this. You're going to ruin yourself. You're going to ruin your whole family. So that is also showing favor. Once Vidura could see that Duryodhana was not going to listen and that he and Dhritarashtra continued on their course of doing everything possible to disturb the Pandavas, even kill them, then Vidura showed his partiality to the Pandavas, as you know, by warning them of danger. After Yudhisthira stirs the pot of memories, then he inquires about the well-being of Vidura. I know you've been on pilgrimage. How did you maintain yourself? How did you keep body and soul together, so to speak? How were you fed? This is Yudhisthira teaching us that we should consider all aspects of a devotee's life, because a devotee is the rarest thing in the material world. Nowadays, in materialistic society, so much fuss is made about preserving rare species of plant life or animal life. The rarest thing in this world is a devotee. So much more effort should be made to preserve devotees, recognize that the exclusiveness of devotional service makes anyone who approaches devotional service the rarest of persons. So, then Yudhisthira Maharaj gives his famous declaration. Tirthi
Purvanti Tirthani.
Persons like you are holy places personified. In other words, you don't really need to go on tour to holy places. Wherever you go, that is a holy place, because you yourself are a tirtha. Now, it is interesting that although Vidura has wandered here and there, and Yudhisthira and the Pandavas, they are at home in the palace, they're on, generally speaking, an equal level of spiritual advancement. In other words, it's not so much whether one has left home and one has stayed at home. That is not the determining factor as to Krishna consciousness. The determining factor is the level of intensity in the engagement of the senses in the service of the Lord. This is a very important point to understand, but nevertheless, Yudhisthira is thinking, you, Vidura, you are going to bring us life. You are going to enlighten us. Although Yudhisthira is Krishna Devata, he's wrapped in attention on Krishna's lotus feet. So then, naturally, Yudhisthira is going to ask him about Krishna. He's going to ask about the devotees in Dwarka. And this is a very delicate situation, which Vidura is going to handle very tactfully. Even in dealing with devotees, yes, you have to use your intelligence. You cannot just be whatever. You're dealing with Krishna's most dear objects, the devotees. So you have to pray to the Lord. I don't have the ability to deal with devotees without you giving me intelligence. Left on my own, I'll just be, I'll cause so many disturbances. I'll cause so many offenses. I'm begging you, my dear Lord, please give me the spiritual intelligence how to interact with your dear devotees. What's the best thing to say at a particular moment? What's the best thing to do? Vidura was expert because he is wrapped in attention on Krishna's lotus feet. He knew, better not talk about the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. It'll be too much. It's not the time. It's not the best thing to do for Krishna right now. That news will come of its own accord. In this way, the Bhagavatam describes him as compassionate. Not only in his dealings with everyone, but especially in his close personal relationships with other devotees. He judged, this is not an appropriate thing to say. Now you might question, but what could be more major in a discussion than news about Lord Krishna and Dwarka? How could Vidura overlook this? He did it out of compassion. He understood, these devotees, these Pandavas are so attached to Krishna, I cannot bear to say this right now. That news will come of its own accord, we'll deal with it at that time. In this way we can learn so much from Vidura in terms of how to be sensitive. Now, it's not that Vidura is sentimental. No, Why is he there in the palace at Hastinapur? He's there to deliver Dhritarashtra. That is his main purpose. As far as Vidura is concerned, Yudhisthira and company, they're already saved. They're Krishna Devata. But what about this Dhritarashtra? This is the nature of Vidura's attachment for his older brother. Again, he's going to try. And he's going to point out, as you're going to hear, to Dhritarashtra, you're making a mistake again. You made a mistake before the battle of Kurukshetra. Now here you are after the battle. You've lost 100 sons. You've lost everything. And here you are making a mistake again. And here I am, Vidura, once again, pointing this out. Now, you might say, what's the big mistake? Dhritarashtra is defeated. He's lost everything. So, he's living with Yudhisthira. He's living with the Pandavas. They're taking care of him. Hey, you've got to get what you get, you know. You do the best you can. try to be comfortable some kind of way. That is the modern understanding. That. So what if Dhritarashtra did everything to try to kill Yudhisthira and his family? Now Yudhisthira is giving him a good deal. You take it. Well, why all this, why all this unnecessary moralism? Yeah. If there's comfort, especially if there's money, you take it. What does it matter if this happened before, that happened before, whatever? Comfort. Facility. So, Vidura doesn't accept that, of course. Vidura is going to point out very strongly to Dhritarashtra, how can you live like this? Especially, 80% of your life has already been wasted. Now, here you are in the precious last years of your life, just living like a dog in the house of those who you did everything to kill. And in fact, they killed your 100 sons. Here you are just resting in comfort, waiting for death to come. You have better things to do. You must leave immediately and proceed with your spiritual dedication. Now, from Yudhisthira's side, he didn't think that there was anything wrong with Dhritarashtra and Gandhari staying in his palace. In fact, Yudhisthira, the way he is, he's thinking, I have caused such offenses. I have killed Dhritarashtra's 100 sons. We have done all this. Let us take care of them. Dhritarashtra and Gandhari so nicely. Yudhisthira, he's not a naive sentimentalist. Yet, he's overlooking completely that Dhritarashtra and company put the Pandavas through hell. It doesn't register with Yudhisthira. And when it comes time, when that morning comes, when Yudhisthira is making his rounds in the palace, going around seeing all the persons greeting him, when he finds out that Dhritarashtra and Gandhari have left, along with Vidura, he's going to be devastated in his heart, accusing himself. What did I do that was wrong? How did I fail in giving proper hospitality to Dhritarashtra? It must be all my fault that he left so suddenly. I did not take proper care of him. This is a devotee. And then, of course, you know, Narada Muni is going to come and relieve the situation by pointing out there's nothing you can do about this. There's no need to lament. Dhritarashtra has gone off into the forest for his spiritual advancement. These are the ways of devotees, how to receive devotees, how to be sensitive to their needs, how to, indeed, this inspires us to beg the Supreme Lord, give me the intelligence how to swim in the ocean of devotee sangha. Don't try to do it by your material abilities. You'll be baffled. And often this happens to us in our interactions with Vaishnavas in our society. If we try to do it all based on our material intelligence, I got you figured out. I know where you're at. I've been in the temple with you for 15 years. I can read you like a book. Before you even do something, I know what you're going to want. I'll block it. No. In fact, the longer that you've been around the devotee, the more it is an opportunity to pray to Krishna. I need help how to see the inconceivable glories of this devotee, how to interact with this devotee for your pleasure, my Lord, how I can be of service to this devotee. One has to actually beg. And then when Krishna hears that prayer, he will equip you more and more with abilities how to swim in the ocean of devotee sangha, even if it's with a devotee you've been around for 30 years together and you think you know that devotee inside and out, and Krishna will show you newer and newer things. So we can take inspiration from Yudhisthira and Vidura and aspire to come into that mentality, that delightful mentality of sporting, splashing, diving in the ocean of devotee association. Of course, Yudhisthira is so expert, not only with devotees, but also with the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Therefore, he wanted to perform the Rajasuya Yajna. He wants to do a grand reception for Bhagavan. For Vidura, you're hearing how they let him bathe, they fed him sumptuously, let him rest, and then they ask questions. This is all an art meant to make the person feel at ease so that the good feelings flow. And also so that knowledge can flow. Yudhisthira knows how to do that with the Supreme Personality of Godhead also. Therefore, in the 10th canto, Yudhisthira presents a proposition to Lord Krishna. My dear Lord, we Pandavas have nothing to ask from you because we have your personal association. We have your two lotus feet. But I want to benefit others. Therefore, the Rajasuya Yajna. How can the Rajasuya Yajna benefit others? Yudhisthira's idea was, I'll show that by worshiping you, my Lord, everyone is going to be happy and everyone will prosper. I want to make that dramatic presentation. This is the thinking of a genuine government leader. I want to use all the opulences of my kingdom to establish Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is very important for us today because you'll find throughout the world, as people know so many things about reincarnation, vegetarianism, the subtle body, this, that, the other, so-called mystical things. They're much more familiar with these things now than when the Krishna consciousness movement first started. In the early 70s, we had the unique, complete monopoly on anything to do with reincarnation, vegetarianism, anything that was not gross. We knew, and everyone knew. You go to the Hare Krishnas, they know all these kind of spiritual things. Now, we don't have that monopoly anymore, especially in the Western countries. There's so much literature, so many speakers who can give their speculations about astral this and psychic that and subtle this, and it goes on and on and on and on and on. So, and vegetarianism, it's not an exotic thing anymore. Reincarnation, not exotic. It used to be in the 70s that the argument would be given, why should we become Krishna conscious? One life is all you have. Just enjoy your senses while you can, then death comes. That's it. That was a standard reply to a reincarnation presentation. Now, I've heard it myself, some people have told me, yes, there's reincarnation, and you're going to get another body. Since you don't know what body you're going to get next, you might as well just enjoy in this life, whatever way. So the conclusion is still the same. whether you so-called know about reincarnation or don't, without understanding Krishna, what is the use? And this is the greatest need today, to teach knowledge of Bhagavan, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like Yudhisthira, out of love, had that desire. I want to establish Krishna. I want the whole world to see the difference between those who are bhaktas and those who are not bhaktas. I want to make it plain for everyone. I even want to demonstrate to the demigods what is their proper place. So, Krishna listened to that and said, yes, this is a very good idea. This will enhance your fame, the fame of your dynasty. The Lord is always thinking about his devotees. So he did not respond that, yes, this will be good for me, this will be good for you. So that way, Yudhisthira took his plans for the Rajasri Yajna, put those plans into action. And, of course, after the liberation of Dhrasandha, when Yudhisthira heard that account, when the other Pandavas returned, he was stunned in ecstasy hearing the glories of the Lord, and then he began his yajna. And as you know, there was a big interruption in that yajna because Shishupal became very disturbed. But that is a very interesting pastime. We don't have time for that now. But for today, please enter into this mood of reception of a devotee for another devotee, of a devotee for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then we'll get more intelligence how to enrich in our lives. All devotees are expert at reception. The gopis in Vrindavan, in the middle of the night, in the forest, the autumn season, the full moon, after Krishna disappeared, suddenly the Lord appears. His dearest devotees had been crying out and talking impulsively based on pure love and playing the best music with perfect rhythm and melody, and suddenly Krishna appeared again. And they made a wondrous reception for the Lord, spreading their shawls on the bank of the Jamuna River. Their shawls were scented with their perfume and kumkum powder. The Jamuna River also contributed to the reception by piling up soft sand on the bank of the Jamuna River. So then the shawls were laid on top of the sand, and Krishna sat on these shawls. And Shukadeva Goswami points out, look at this. That Lord who is acquired in the heart of a yogi with such great difficulty, he's so easily seated outside the heart on the shawls of these simple cowherd women. How glorious is this? This is reception. Even some of them were a little angry at Krishna, yet they made such a gorgeous reception, and the cool breezes of the night forest were blowing, the bees were humming, everything was perfect for this darshan of the Supreme Lord. And Krishna reciprocated perfectly by expanding himself to sit on so many shawls, so everyone had face-to-face personal contact with the Lord. So this is sensitivity. Krishna's yoga maya energy inspired him. Let every one of these dearest devotees have me sitting on the shawl. So Krishna did that. In this way, we can see that how to be sensitive, how to be responsive, how to arrange a proper setting for receiving a devotee as well as the Supreme Lord. This is the real joy in life. At this point, we'll stop and ask if you have any questions.
Happiness comes automatically, stress comes automatically, so why make it to there? So I have trouble constantly I know that I go to work, I get a paycheck, I come home, I take my family on vacation, and I enjoy it. And I don't like the poorhouse. So why not endeavor? I got the results, and I enjoy it. How can you deny this?
The mistake of that notion is to often. His question was, it's quite obvious. You make money by working hard, you bring home the money, and then there's enjoyment, yourself, your family, going on vacations. Yes, that's a fair presentation of the question. All right. This is the great Western hallucination that's spreading all over the world, and you're getting it in India now, too. Money automatically equals happiness. Now, I quoted this UN survey, which shows that there's no correlation. The poorest country in the world, a couple of years ago, got the number one rating for material happiness. This year, I think it's Mexico. So, where is the USA? Where is Germany? Where is England? So, what is the Vedic answer to this? Your money is one thing, and happiness is another thing. Just because you have money doesn't mean you have material happiness. But these people make that mistake, that cash automatically means happiness. It is not so. And anyone who wanders around in India to the poorest villages, you go to Eka Chakra, you see people who practically have nothing, and their faces are smiling, they're relaxed, they're not taking stress courses. So this is the big hallucination. Money equals happiness. You may work hard to increase your money, but you cannot increase the stock of happiness that is due to you from your past life. So what if you make a big business deal and you earn another $1 million, but that doesn't affect the happiness that you're due from your past life? So this is a difficult point for people to understand today because of this propaganda that's covering the world, and it's really tearing apart India now. Get money, get conveniences, get luxuries, you'll be happy like the other people. This is the big problem. Yes?
Maharaj, you're saying that our happiness and our distress is predetermined.
That's Narayamuni says, our happiness and distress is predetermined. Yes. Prahlad Maharaj also says that.
So does the happiness and distress, this Olympia astrology, like the hands, the lines of the hands, they change, the karma changes, just by clapping them in front of the deities. So similarly, by the performance of devotional service, is our allotment, our quota of happiness and distress, does that also change from devotional service?
Devotee is not interested in material happiness or distress. A devotee is simply interested in Krishna's pleasure. So whether or not a devotee's happiness or distress is increasing or decreasing, that devotee actually is not paying so much attention to that. The devotee is paying attention to Krishna's pleasure. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in the Leela of Puja, Chimakram, points out that if in the process of your simply worrying about Krishna's pleasure, you become happy, that's not a fault. So don't feel bad if you're happy in Krishna consciousness. If while you're simply focused on how can I please Krishna's senses, you feel happy, it's okay. But the warning given by Shukadeva Goswami is don't actually be like Puja, who wanted to use the Lord to satisfy her senses. Don't actually do that. And that warning is especially given by Shukadeva Goswami for those devotees who are attached to Krishna in intimate relationships. Don't do like this. Kaviraj Goswami points out that the paradoxical nature of the relationship between Krishna and the gopis is that although the gopis never desired their own pleasure, Krishna forced it upon them. This is, of course, very high things, which are there in Prabhupada's books. It requires some deep thought and a lifetime of service. Yes.
Thank you. explained about the dealings with devotees and relationship with devotees, I wonder, on the liberated platform, we know that Krishna is the source of all rasa, and there is an exchange between the vidu and the anu as a flow of rasa or emotion. Now, it's on the liberated platform, I think, rasa between the jiva, the liberated, the living entity,
any kind of emotional flavor in relationship can be called rasa. Even in the material world, that perverted rasa is there. And certainly the relationships in the spiritual world have their flavors. Because Krishna is in the center of the devotee relationships, that is what makes the rasa exchanges between devotees in terms of the emotions, the personal feelings, that is what makes such feelings an ocean of pleasure and increased Krishna consciousness, because the service of the Lord is in the center. That is enough. Thank you very much. All glories to Prabhupada.